Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Hey, welcome back to the Video Nasty Project. Tonight we are going to be reviewing a movie with Joe Spinell and Carolyn Monroe, Star Crash.
Wrong movie, idiot.
We're going to be watching a movie tonight starring Joe Spinell and Carolyn Monroe, Maniac.
Still the wrong movie, idiot.
Tonight we're going to be watching the film starring Joe Spinell and Carolyn Monroe, The Last Horror Film.
About fucking time.
Yes! Roll the trailer.
It was more than just a tease. The way women toyed with him. Everywhere he went, they were there, making him feel small. Making him want them.
Does your mommy know what you're doing?
So when Vinny finally persuaded a woman or two to spend a little time, he made sure what he got was more than just teased. Fanatic. Rated R.
The good news about the last horror film is that 53 seconds in, you get titties! I timed it. We just got done seeing the last horror film.
Okay, yeah.
So, the movie, it stars Joe Spinell and Carolyn Monroe back together again from Maniac. Which, if you've never seen Maniac, what the fuck are you doing watching us? Turn this shit off and go watch Maniac right now, because that shit's tight.
Yes.
So, the story is that you've got Vinny, and he is this cab driver in New York with aspirations that he wants to be a film producer. Mm-hmm. And he is a super horror nerd. He is a nerd of all stripes, because this threw me for a moment. The first time we really see him, he is in his cab parked out front of a comic book in New York. And this is the interesting vintage New York of about 1979, 1980, 81. And so he's sitting there reading this copy of Starburst magazine. Now, this is only something that, like, you and I and, like, the nerds out there are going to know. Starburst is essentially the analog to Starlog here in America, mm-hmm. but it was only made in the UK. So, obviously, being a UK production would be like, wait a minute, what the hell's that doing in New York? Except because Vinny is this super nerd about film. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he had imported. That's what my brain figured out a little later down the road.
I really get a kick out of the real, like, the stereotypical caricature New Yorkers, because there's a line of them up on the sidewalk and they're talking to one another, and occasionally they look at Vinny and they flip it. They're flinging shit at him.
The guy in the pool from The Killing Hour would fit perfectly in with the guys on the steps, because they're all, like, talking shit, and they're just essence of New York from the late 70s, early 80s.
Yes. And the one guy who really stuck out is he's in a black suit, he's got sunglasses on, but this shocking white mustache and beard, neatly cut. It's just like, this guy is a mobster.
Almost certainly.
I'm like, almost this guy certainly is a mobster. Did mobster fund this film?
It happened with Texas Chainsaw. And so Vinny, being an aspiring director, has a script. And he also has a undying passionate love for Carolyn Monroe. And she is playing, coming off this one just released film. And they're debuting it at Cannes, the film festival. And so Vinny, he's all like, I can get this opportunity. Takes him and his script, goes to Cannes, and tries to corner Carolyn.
He looks like the guy you'd expect to find in an Italian delicatessen, not behind the counter. He's the one who spends all day sitting with a half-eaten sandwich and a cold cup of coffee, being a sleazeball. That's the kind of guy that he comes across to me as.
He is essentially a Joe Spinell, the distillation of Joe in Joe form.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
One of the things that I really liked is the fact that he has an interaction with his mom in the movie. And
played by his real mom.
Played by his real mom. And she has a career. She played that kind of a character. That's all she ever did. And she did it in over 30 movies.
I loved her. She is this doddering, kind of almost senile, kind of... She has the best ending line to the entire movie. And when we get to the point of the movie at the ending... Okay, we're pretty cavalier about the spoilers, but you really ought to go see this movie because it's a hell of a twist.
It is a freaking hell of a good twist.
And she has the best ending line to any movie I've ever seen. It's fucking amazing. So I love her so dearly.
Yes, she's very good. Let's jump ahead a little bit. Because I want to touch upon something after having made the comment about his appearance and what he comes across as. He cleans up really well.
So Vinny goes to cons and he's in this morass of Hollywood and he's living the dream. And he suddenly starts having fantasies about him being this big shot. And he's dressed in this tuxedo and he's walking the red carpet and there's flash bulbs going off and he's loving everybody. And so when he's in fantasy mode, Joe Spinell looks really fucking good.
Yeah, he doesn't look like he's got a 5 o'clock shadow. He's, you know, clean shave. Well, I mean, he's got his mustache and whatnot.
But he's not sweaty.
He's not sweaty. He's literally, like, he can afford the 5-star hotel that most of these people are staying at. He can afford it, and he's drinking champagne and having a good time. It's just, and the juxtaposition between that and then Vinny. Oh, my God.
And so as he's trying to get his script in front of Carolyn Monroe and getting cock-blocked at pretty much every turn, there's somebody who is picking off the stars at cons.
Mm-hmm. She's there with her agent, producer, who's her current love interest.
And awkwardly,
her ex-husband.
Yeah.
Brett is the ex-husband. Her agent producer is Stanley, who is actually the director of this, of the real director of the real film. And he's good. Yeah. The murders start happening. Brett is the first one to go.
Right. And all of a sudden the police freak out because there's a superstar at the most prestigious film event on the planet has suddenly been murdered. And so they're trying to keep a lid on this. There's a little bit of investigation going around.
Well, let's back up just a second. It's not that a big high profile guy has got been murdered. It's there's a claim that he's been murdered. There's no body and they can't find him anywhere.
And then people start dismissing it as a publicity stunt because, well, it's cons. And if watching the Canon film documentary showed me anything, that you will do anything in your power to get your eyes on you. So
yeah,
that's probably what happened.
Yeah.
Or so they claim.
Now, one of the things also that one of the other little moments in this is that fictionally, Carolyn Monroe's character, Jenna.
We'll just call her Carolyn.
It bounces around a bit. Some people call her Jan. Some say Jenna. It's just weird. It's inconsistent. But she is, in the movie, the first woman to get a leading actress award for a horror film at cons.
Ironically, the year that they shot this at Cannes was the year that Possession came out. Possession, also on the list, with Isabella Adjani, was the first person to win a Cannes award for a horror movie.
Yep.
So, whoa, we're really meta here.
Yeah. And one of the things that really dates the timing of the filming is the news broadcast talking about Brinkley having attempted to assassinate Reagan.
I thought that was kind of an interesting subtext that they were running through the movie is mm-hmm. There's a lot of obsession with what horror does to people. Mm-hmm. There's the They talk about Hinckley trying to assassinate Reagan because he was obsessed with Jodie Foster. They were also talking about the Pope being assassinated, which happened like a couple of weeks later. Now, the guy that tried to kill the Pope was rumored to be like from this KGB, rumored to be this, rumored to be that. It's not really an obsession with the Pope, but there's a layer of the common people attacking the beautiful people.
Yes. And it's done very well. And one of the things that's also a little bit of a, I think was a really neat connection that was used, is that Vinny is a taxi driver.
And that's what got Jodie Foster on Hinckley's radar. And one of the other kind of meta portions of the movie is that, okay, you're at cons, you do interview junkets and press junkets and stuff. And so they're debuting the movie. They got Carolyn and like all the directors and whatnot on stage, and they're asking her interviews, and they start talking about stuff like horror movies. They damage people, don't they? And she's like, that's crazy bullshit. Basically.
Yeah.
So there is a real layer of meta-ness to this entire movie.
One of the things that I find really interesting with that particular element within the film, where they're interviewing her and talking about horror films and how they affect people, is it's almost like when they wrote the script, they were going to take a jab at Mary Whitehouse,
who at that point had been hanging around a little bit, but the Video Nasties hadn't really got going yet.
No, not until 84. But before we get to more people disappearing, let's talk about Vinny and his obsession and what happens during one of his obsession moments.
At this point, he has been blocked at every front. He's like, you know, he tries to get in the back door of the Club 54 and they're like, no, 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 you're a slob. Get away from us. So eventually he just climbs up the outside of the building, across the roof, in front of this giant neon sign, down into her window in her bathroom, and she's wearing her towel and she freaks the fuck out, understandably.
Vinny's obsession really comes more dramatic because what does he do? He busts the bottle of champagne and starts pointing the broken bottle at her. Like, oh shit.
So the movie is essentially trying to drum up some red herrings and basically point the finger of blame to Vinny. And it's scenes like this sprinkled throughout that kind of make you go, what the hell's going on here? My issue with that was that they leaned so heavily on the it's Vinny, it's Vinny, it's Vinny, that it couldn't possibly have been Vinny because it's too goddamn obvious.
We'll tell you who it is in a little bit. Now there, and now here briefly, I'll go into that whole fast lane on the freeway, and there's a slow car suddenly in front of you, and you have to change lanes to go around the bastard because he shouldn't be there in the first place. And this, and the whole Vinny subplot being psycho, being too obvious, being too in your face, there's that slow moving car for me. That's where I'm like,
you would have preferred if they had committed all the way to him being the actual man behind the killings, or dialed way the hell back?
Dial it back. Actually, bring about more suspense, more intrigue. At this point, there's no suspense. There's no intrigue.
You know, really, throughout the whole movie, there's not really a hell of a lot of suspense and horror and tension going on. It's really, despite the film being the last horror film, not really horrific.
That's another of that subtle layer of, that's a slow-moving car in the fast lane for me. There's a lot of the horror movie tropes are happening in this film. And they're done well. But there's no suspense. I want some suspense with these horror tropes. That's what I wanted.
I think the reason they crammed so many horror tropes in here, warning, now we're actually going to get to the spoiler because we're going to talk about the ending here, is that the movie is essentially, so you've got the movie that we are currently watching, Joe running around con trying to get his script in front of, what's her face?
Carolyn.
And then you've got the movie that he's trying to shoot. So he's got his camera. He's running around getting some B-roll in the crowds and whatnot. And then we get to the very end of the movie, where it turns out that this whole thing was just a movie that he was showing Mom. He completed his movie, and this is the end result. To which then we get the famous line, Mom's asking, it's like, you know, you're never going to make any money on this damn thing. He's like, oh yeah, but this is going to be my last horror film. I'm going to make like an adventure movie, and like Raiders of the Lost Ark is really big. I'm going to jump on that.
While he's saying this, he's lit a cigarette and starting to take puffs off of it. And?
What is it, Ma?
You got a joint?
Mommy. My little mommy.
I fucking love the ending of the thing. It was so non-sequitur.
Yeah. I enjoyed that. It was funny. I was like, that really was good. I want to back up a moment and touch upon a couple of other things really quick. So as the movie progresses, more people are dying. And Stanley and one of the other girls, he takes off. Stanley wanders off. And he's still out of the darkness. You can hear him talking. So she starts wandering and following him up. And he ends up going up into this turret or whatever of a castle or something. I don't know what it is. But anyway, there's this... It's shot at night, there's no real lighting, but there's enough light. You can see that during the day, it's probably a really good view because you can see the horizon and the lights of the city and whatnot. And while she's trying to find Stanley, we see Stanley get stabbed to death. Cut! He had the knife. What?
What the hell's going on here? I'm glad you brought up the castle because I loved that setting. The whole setting for the entire movie, I really, really fucking dug. I loved watching all the posters at cons float by. You see, For Your Eyes Only, a giant poster with the legs, and you have to walk between the legs.
Mm-hmm.
There's Possession, which we noted. There's Roy Scheider horror flick that turned its name around from Stab to something else. I loved watching all of that stuff. I loved the castle. The castle is just great. They shot this bit in Switzerland, and it's this great old Swiss castle, really toweling and battlements, and looks fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. They got real good value for their money shooting on a location like this. So one of the other things that I really, really fucking dig about this movie is I loved the leads. The acting overall in general I thought was really strong.
Yeah.
Carolyn and Joe, they've got great chemistry. I thought all the supporting actors were really good. Ironically, this is the biggest star-studded cast that we've had in the entire list. Because we've got folks like Chris Christopherson mm-hmm. and Karen Black, and fucking Robin Leach turns up in this thing. And it's like, what the... I had to rewind back, and it's like, is that... It is. What the fuck's he doing in this? He actually has a speaking part in this.
Yeah, he's one of the film judges. And it's just...
It's got Kathy Lee Crosby in it. It's got, well, all this B-roll footage... In cons.
And one of the things I want to touch upon briefly is the director and one of the supporting actors in the film, the guy playing Stanley, David Miller, anyway. He's got a long career. It's not a huge career, but he's got a long career. He was in West Side, the original first movie version of West Side Story.
He did Space Mutiny, to which, if you've ever seen Mystery Science Theater, this is the infamous, the best, when everybody says, hey, what's your favorite Mystery Science Theater episode? Space Mutiny. This guy did it.
If you get a chance and you look up his name, IMDb, whatever, you'll look it up and you'll see, this guy knows, he had a long time in Hollywood. He had the experience, and the experience is very evident in this film.
It's got some great cinematography. There's that one scene where they're at the airport and the stars are arriving and the camera is low to the ground and the Learjet kind of starts taxiing up and it's just like, it's a close-up on the wheel the shot ends on. It's stuff like that that really works. The dude's got an eye.
Yeah, he's got a very good eye. And so I hope I've impressed that upon you and our audience that I don't hate the film.
It doesn't work for you.
It just isn't there enough for me to go, oh, it's a great film. It's got a lot of great moments. I know the quality is there. There are people who are going to enjoy watching this, and there are some people who are probably going to be like, are you freaking kidding me? Because it might literally be that slow car in the fast lane.
You know, that sounds like a good end point. We're going to be done. Perfect. There you go. So, Ian, would you take and seize the last horror film, or would you leave it alone?
I'd leave it alone.
there's abso-fucking-lutely nothing to this at all.
There's so little that's actually, like, literally ooh about it.
It's got the blowtorch to the face, maybe?
That really looked like somebody burned a pizza, which isn't gross. It's not.
All the violence is, okay, this gets a little bit meta. It's the movie within the movie within the movie, so none of it's real, so I don't fucking know.
Could it have to do with the people that are in it?
I would guess not, just because that level of investigation is far beyond the reach of the cop just going through the video store and dumping stuff into a bag.
And considering the sheer amount of input, I mean, the sensory input, looking at titles and all of these things, and for a beat cop who isn't familiar with the genre as a fan to go, oh, these are the two in Maniac, this must be bad.
But it's not the cover, it's not the content, it's not the name.
No, certainly not.
So I have no idea why this would land on the list. So, yeah, I'm going to let it go.
It's safe. Watch it.
It's safe. Yeah, there you go. All right. I suspect, judging from your commentary up to this point, that I know the answer, but I have to ask anyway. Did you like the last horror film?
The movie isn't bad enough to qualify as it's so bad that it's good, but at the same time, it's not quite good enough to be, it's a good film either. It's middling. It's got a good production value. The acting is done well. There's just a couple of things that just make me go,
I suspect for you, this movie kind of falls into the same category as The Driller Killer for me, because I can appreciate The Driller Killer for its artistic merits and what it was trying to do and what it was trying to say, but it doesn't work for me on pretty much any level aside from, hey, that looks pretty cool. I suspect that's what's happening with you here.
I'm going to be honest, folks. It took me several times watching this to get all of the film in.
Counterpoint to that, I hit play and was fucking gripped for the entire runtime. I'm like, I cannot take my eyes away.
Okay, now when it comes to The Killing Hour, I was glued to the screen the entire time.
And I had to do a couple of steps at it, too. All right, your mileage may vary, man. It's crazy.
Yes, very, very, very evident that
I dug the fuck out of this. This is one of those movies where it would have completely flown under my radar if not for this list. And this list made me watch it, and I am eternally grateful to Mary Whitehouse for that, because I really fucking dug this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the meta movie within a movie within a movie. I thought Carolyn and Joe had great chemistry. I mean, they were always good together. They were good in Star Crash. They were good in Maniac.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked on all those levels. And I just like the frantic energy of setting it in Cannes during the film festival.
That's the problem I have with it.
Go on.
Okay, you take the opening of the film that's set in New York City with New Yorkers. It's shot with sound. So the actor's dialogue is it's the actor speaking. It's not dubbed. And you're getting a genuine performance, New Yorkers acting like New Yorkers.
However,
you get to the point where they go to France, you get to Cannes. The entire all of the sequences were shot MOS. So they had to dub them. They had to put in sound effects.
I am not going to hold this movie sound design against it, because we have seen some absolute shit movies with shit sound design. Hell, Andy Milligan standing just off frame shouting strange action at his extras while the thing is running. We've seen that. So I can live with a little bit of hinky dubbing and sound effects.
Okay, but there's more.
Go on.
Sound design was a problem? But you get to the guerrilla shooting element of it, you have no lights. You have a lot of scenes shot at night with no lights. So you can't see half of the things that are going on. He's relying on the ambient light to light the scene, and some of the scenes are lost. You're just like, what? Oh, okay, there's a person now.
Now, let's be absolutely fair in that there are portions of this movie that were restored from lost footage and VHS, and they look like shit. That might be some of the parts you're talking about where it legitimately, I can't tell what the fuck is going on when that bag lady is ripping open the dude's chest and like eating his heart.
That's a go-to answer. I'm not saying it's a bad answer. But having been a person who has been behind the camera, a person who has worked with lighting, I can recognize when it's a bad copy versus bad lighting in the first place.
Okay, that's fair enough.
It's obvious that David Miller's intent was, his selling point was the fact that I'm shooting at cons.
You know, I would absolutely, if I was in his shoes, I would fucking seize that opportunity. So I'll give him the credit for that.
Yeah. One of the things that I think would have saved the film to make it happier for me would be if he had simply gone and gotten static shots of the Cannes Film Festival and then shot the rest of it on a soundstage in Los Angeles. Because he went to Los Angeles to shoot on a soundstage.
All right, split decision. It sounds like you've got some absolutely valid reasons, but you can admit that it can work for some people.
Oh, yeah. I actually have a lot of positive things that I can point out about the movie throughout the entire film. It's just that when my suspenders of disbelief and someone keeps tugging on them.
Yes, you're going to either love this movie or you're going to hate it, just like us. You necessarily didn't like it. I liked it. There you go.
Well, it's not that I don't like it.
Okay. All right, well, where would you give it? You'd give it this, that, or...
Because...
Yeah, all right, split decision. There you go. What are you going to do?
Is now the time is here. Now's the time for a bite of cheer. A tasty light where the price is right. Well, look at here, you'll dig this sight. The moment's handy for a piece of candy. Just name your brand, they're all so grand. Hey, what do you think of an ice cool drink? Or a big box filled with a popcorn thrill? Let your taste buds meet with an ice cream treat. Refresh yourselves, it's time to eat. So come on, folks, let's join the band as we all head for the refreshment stand.
Hey, thanks for coming back and watching another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Really hope you enjoyed our review of the last horror film. Next up is The Last Hunter. Rambo-ish kind of film? We'll find out. Anyway, please like, subscribe, comment below, share this if you can. And if you have any questions, you can also email us at thevideonastyproject@gmail.com. And as per usual, stay evil.
Good evening, mademoiselle. I'm doing a study from articles. I want to examine the psychological effect of the horror films on the public. Many people still believe that repeated viewings of these films is warping the minds of you young people. Now, my study... You little shit.